This is the sound of football.
And on the show this week, we review the World Cup playoffs and size up the pros and cons of Ireland's exit at the hands of the French, literally. We assess Wigan's narrow 8-goal defeat at White Hart Lane yesterday and wonder whether Jermaine Defoe has gone up in Fabio Capello's estimation at all. And we look at arguably the worst run of form for any team going into a Champions League match as Liverpool faced De Bretagne this Tuesday. All that, plus a look ahead to the second round of the FA Cup, all on this week's Sound of Football. And a very warm welcome once again to the Sound of Football. It's my duty to tell you that, unfortunately, this week we don't have Terry DeFellin with us due to reasons too many to explain, but I'm pleased to say we do have Graham Sibley from...
He can't work his computer, that's what it is.
Oh, if you have to say so, then yes, that's what it is. He's having a bit of a moment with his technical setup, so apologies for the lack of Terry this week, but we do have Graham Sibley from Some People on the Pitch and the Onion Bag, so welcome, Graham.
Hello.
You'll have to do the work of two men this week, you realise that, don't you?
it'll be no problem at all.
Good, pleased to hear it. Right, well, we'll start off, I think, just by kind of doing a brief... review of last week's World Cup playoffs. Now, I know some of you are going to roll your eyes. I know this is probably old news for a lot of you, but we did kind of preview the second legs of all the European playoffs that were going on, as well as various other things. So let's kind of draw a line under those. First of all, we've got to really start off with the match between Ireland and France, which, for those of you that have had your head stuck in a gas oven for the last week, finished 1-1, which means France go through to the World Cup finals in 2010. On aggregate 2-1, and of course, even if you have had your head stuck in a gas oven, you can't fail to have missed the whole hoo-ha surrounding the goal that France scored, equaliser to Ireland's goal scored by Robbie Keane earlier on in the game, and the fact that Thierry Henry, of course, handled the ball in the approach to the goal being scored by William Gallas. I mean, it's been done to death. We know this has all been done to death, but I just wanted to say, Graham, that I mean, what I find kind of curious is that in the immediate aftermath of the game finishing, I was on Twitter, as I suspect you were, and I know Terry was as well.
Yes, I was.
And the feeling at the time was one of immense sympathy for Ireland, and the fact that everyone was on Ireland's side and saying that how terrible it was that they'd been cheated out of this, which is fair enough. But if you sort of fast forward about sort of 12, 24 hours, I mean, I was out and about the following day on Thursday last week, sort of in my car and listening to the radio, and it seemed to me that the whole thing had swung completely against Ireland then, and that everyone was suddenly coming out and saying, hang on a sec, the only thing that Ireland have been cheated out of isn't a place at the World Cup finals, it's actually a penalty shootout. That's all they were cheated out of. Some can argue that they should have scored anyway more goals during the course of, well, not just that match earlier on in that match, but also maybe the first leg, or even indeed in the whole qualifying campaign, which is something we've touched on before, the Ireland's weakness in not being able to score more goals. Now that the dust has settled, what are your feelings about the whole affair and who perhaps you'd rather have seen in the World Cup, but who deserved to be there perhaps?
Well, it's a question of the fact that the Ireland were probably at the beginning of the qualifying campaign would have been quite happy with getting a place in a playoff place, and France would have been quite unhappy about getting a playoff place, and so you sort of think when the two came together, it was really sort of like you were having two teams that really were getting a second bite at the cherry,
yeah.
When Ireland, fair enough, they hadn't lost for the whole campaign.
Right.
But out of all their 10 games, they'd only won 4 of them. They'd drawn 6, and that was the real crux of their problem. Mm. They just weren't winning enough games. They weren't scoring enough goals. France themselves had only lost one game, and they were drawing too many goals. So it wasn't any surprise at all that it was a tight affair.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think really the sort of the change in reaction. I mean, certainly when I first saw it, very very sympathetic with the Irish. I mean, like it was more shocking to see that it was such a blatant handball.
Right.
That said, when it was in play, I thought I was more concerned with the offside.
Mm.
I wonder actually because it's also about cheating and everything. It's like if the goal had just been, if it had come off his thigh, and he played it back,
yeah,
instead of his hand, would there have been so much hoo-ha about the ball, about him actually being offside at the beginning of it.
Curious.
I don't know. It's weird. I mean, like you would have heard, there would have been lots and lots of complaints, but nowhere near on the level of what we've seen.
No, indeed.
I'm not surprised that attitudes changed though, because it was a question of, like, you know, because the initial reaction was so vitriolic and so. Well, you know, quite rightly, like from the Irish side, like you know, they felt absolutely cheated, and you know, that was the word, they were cheated.
Yeah.
But you know, I think you've seen different things coming out all over the next few days, and yes, people were saying, well, look, Ireland weren't actually cheated of a place at the World Cup; they were cheated out of the chance of a penalty shootout. Mm. They, if they were going to go through by right, they needed to score anyway. They didn't do that, and it's those are the bald facts. And they had lots of chances to score, and they didn't do that. So they were cheated out of a 50-50 chance of going through on penalties.
Sure.
And I don't care what you say, that French goalkeeper was having one of the nights of his life in goal.
He was indeed, Lloris.
And I don't fancy their chances in a penalty shootout against them, especially with the fact that no one in the Ireland team seems to know where the back of the net is.
quite there is that. Yeah, I mean, I have to say, actually, at this juncture, if there's anybody listening that may have seen my Twitter comments in the immediate aftermath of the game between Ireland and France, I should apologise if I offended. I think I did offend one person. You know who you are if you're listening in. Let's put it this way: I'd had a few cold drinks and I was feeling a bit more relaxed than normal. Go on.
I don't think you should apologise. I mean, people are going to be offended if you're an Ireland fan.
Hmm.
But if you're not an Ireland fan, you can probably take a ball. You know. Well, I suppose people would say, oh yeah, you know, you'd be different if it was England. Well, yes, but then again, so would you. you'd probably be, like I'm sure if it had happened to England, Ireland fans wouldn't be coming out and like you know, shoulder to shoulder with us saying, yeah, we're with you. Like, you know, no, they'd be laughing down their sleeves, wouldn't they?
Well, the thing is, I didn't directly attack Ireland, actually. I'm certainly not anti-Irish, I'm not pro-French,
no,
I'm nothing.
Of course not.
I think the comment I made when the final whistle went was, oh, come on, would you rather not seen France at the World Cup then or something? Mm. And the point I was getting at, I probably made a ham-fisted attempt at trying to sort of say it, is that on balance for the neutral, France basically play the more aesthetically pleasing football. They pass the ball around fantastic well, and that's not to say that Ireland didn't deserve to play didn't deserve their place at the World Cup, because they don't, because basically Ireland are really hard working. They had, you know, showed a lot of determination and did well to get their goal. But on balance, as a neutral, you know, I was basically sort of saying, would you rather see France at the World Cup? And that, which was kind of my view, it's not anti-Irish. If Ireland had qualified, I'd have been perfectly happy, thank you very much. But on balance, given the choice, I think I'd go for France. And that's kind of what I was saying. And unfortunately, I know there were one or two people who took a bit umbrage of that. So, you know, sorry and all that. But that's kind of what I was getting at. And it, you know, I'll try not to consume as much alcohol as I did on Wednesday.
Well, you know, Chris, they're only internet people, so they don't really exist.
They don't really exist, and of course, I can block them on my Twitter account, which is a nice bonus. But anyway, so there we go. So that's it. Ireland sadly won't be at the World Cup next time around. They'll have to wait, like many other teams, for their next chance of glory, which will be Euro 2012. More on which at a later stage. But as far as the other European qualifiers going on concerned. Slovenia managed to get, I won't say a shock win, because they were sort of much fancied by a lot of people, but they won 1-0 against Russia at home, which meant they go through 2-2 on aggregate on the away goals rule. So congratulations to Slovenia. No,
no less than they actually deserve from the two games, really. Yeah. And Russia really were just devoid of ideas. I think Damien Duff's comments about the fact that FIFA only want Adidas sponsored teams in there falls a bit down on with Russia going out. I mean, they were pretty hopeless in that game, and they looked completely devoid of idea. They didn't look like the sort of like the buccaneering team that we'd seen a year and a half earlier ago in the Euros.
That's right, yeah, just a completely different outfit. And I mean, I'm not normally critical of the Guardian Football Weekly podcast, but there was some spiel that was going on last week where somebody was talking about the fact that Russia are getting very blasé, and in fact they've even decided to wear their new kit early, as if to sort of say, look at us in our burgundy and gold embossed kit, which we will be wearing at the World Cup next year. And so I thought that's taking a completely wrong angle on that. I'm sorry, but that's just that's a fairly sort of pathetic angle to take. I just think, because to be honest, lots of other countries launched their new kit on that night as well. So I don't think just a load of old poppycock, really. So, but Slovenia played it exactly right, got their goal and defended it well, and so they are going through. As are Greece, who I sort of hedged my bets on, I think, in the game against Ukraine, and Greece won that one 1-0, which is 1-0 on aggregate. So Greece make only their second appearance at the World Cup finals as a result of that. And Portugal got another 1-0 win to add to the one that they got in the first leg. They beat Bosnia and Herzegovina 2-0 on aggregate. So it turned out all right in the end for Portugal. Weren't so sure about that earlier on in the campaign, but
no, we weren't. And that's the thing. Like both France and Portugal got through in the end when it was looking like they were both going to struggle even to get playoff spots at one point, wasn't
it? That's right. I think we sort of half suspected that they would just sort of bumble through in the end and get there. Same could be said indeed of Uruguay, who in their intercontinental playoff against Costa Rica got a 1-1 draw, which means that Uruguay threw 2-1 on aggregate. Uruguay actually went 1-0 up in that game, so 2-0 on aggregate, but they did concede one late on, which made things a little bit nervy towards the end, but Uruguay threw. And the other game that was going on was the big one, as it were, in Africa, Algeria against Egypt, which we mentioned in the last podcast, going on neutral soil in Sudan, and Algeria won that one 1-0. Did you see any of that, Graham?
I did actually. It was thoroughly entertaining.
I think aside from all the background shenanigans going on with kind of violent sets of fans and heaven knows what else, I thought it was a great advert for African football, and will give African football a great shot in the arm, because it'll sort of raise the profile. So been well covered, not just in Africa but further afield, like in the UK as well. So. Great match. I agree. And
Certainly. I mean, I was on Twitter while I was watching it at the same time. Mm. And I follow quite a number of football bores such as ourselves, who were all watching it across the world. And it really had captured the imagination, I think. And it was just a fantastic, amazing atmosphere. And it just sort of shows you what sort of passions that it was actually really. That it was getting this was a ground in Sudan that was packed out with both teams. It was utterly incredible,
fantastic. And with that and all the other qualifiers, it means we now have finally a list of 32 qualifiers for the World Cup next year, and we'll quickly rattle through them just in case you've forgotten who's there and who isn't. From Africa, it's as well as the host South Africa, there's Algeria, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Cameroon and Ghana. Who do you rate out of those out of interest, Garrett?
Ivory Coast and Ghana will be my picks out of that. Yeah. Those lot. I mean, those were two of the very early qualifiers.
Yeah.
Cameroon and Nigeria. Cameroon pretty much coasted through their group. Nigeria really did leave it late, didn't they?
Yeah. It was between. Well, I was going to say. I think on the same basis, I'm kind of a bit wary of Cameroon and Nigeria on account of the fact they both started a bit sort of sluggishly, really. But I'll go for the same two as yourself. Yeah. I think.
I don't think Algeria will be doing anything in the tournament. No. But I think it's just great for them to be there, I think.
Yeah. So, as we've mentioned before, I think the so-called lesser teams deserve their place there, if only just to kind of trip up some of the bigger ones. So no bad thing. In Asia, it's Australia, Japan, North Korea and South Korea. North Korea, that's very much a joker in the pack there, and although not the most exciting team in terms of goal scoring, but certainly they've got a very mean defence, so it'll be interesting to see whether they can apply that to some of the bigger teams in the competition.
I think Australia as well from the Asian section are probably going to be the most competitive ones out of those sides, but it's the same with Japan and South Korea. You never really know what you're going to get when they come out. I mean, like, they can play blinders, and they do play a lot of tournament football. So
we shall be keeping an eye on them. And from Europe, 13 teams: Denmark, France, Greece, the Netherlands, Serbia, Slovenia, Switzerland, England, Germany, Italy, Portugal, Slovakia, and Spain. A couple of sort of new names there, namely Slovakia, who I think England played in qualifiers. I think I might mention this before, actually. I think it was was it Euro 2004, something like that. I think we've played them fairly recently, and have improved since then, most importantly. Serbia, playing independently for the first time, and Slovenia. I'm not sure if they've been at the World Cup before. If they have, it was only once.
They have. They were in 2002. They were there.
Okay. Thank you for reminding me of that. And I say Greece only once before. So some good teams out of those. Any dark horses, do you feel?
Not really too sure. I mean, Switzerland have got quite a high FIFA ranking at the moment, mm-hmm. but I'm not really sure why.
Denmark, usually when they do qualify for a World Cup, they tend to kind of get to the knockout stages. So.
Yeah, they do. I mean, they've had some quite good successes recently. Mm.
Spain go without saying. Of course, we've mentioned them before.
Yeah, I mean, Holland and France. It looks like Netherlands and Portugal are going to be unseeded. Mm.
Yes,
isn't it?
Absolutely. So, yes, going by your article that you did for us on some people on the pitch. Not so long ago, which has gained a lot of interest, I have to say. It's going to be surprising unless FIFA do their usual bit of smoke and mirrors shenanigans, and sort of engineer it to their own good.
Well, I think what you'll find is the fact that it's going to be two quite strong European teams that are going to be unseeded. Mm. So I think at the moment it looks like it's going to be Portugal and the Netherlands. Yeah. In which case, then. Unless either one of those is going to be drawn in the same group as South Africa, you've really got a group of death there, in the making.
Yes, indeed.
Because they're going to be, if you get Holland and say another big one like Italy or Germany there, then all of a sudden whoever's coming in from the rest of the world pots, is going to have a real struggle there. But you know that's what World Cups are all about. Yeah. You know, you can get. That's part of the charm,
part
isn't it?
Part of the charm, yes. And from North Central America and the Caribbean, usual suspects, the USA and Mexico, along this time with Honduras, sort of, if you like, taking Costa Rica's place there. Again, I think the likelihood of Honduras ripping the place up is probably low, but they've got a really well-organised team and some passionate fans there, and I think it'll be certainly... great to see them at the World Cup next year, and they'll obviously be hoping for a favourable draw if they can. And then finally, you know, New Zealand, we've talked about before. In fact, not finally, I haven't quite got to the end actually, but I mean, I forget all the South American teams, can't forget them. But New Zealand, a rare chance to see them in action. And then South America, talking of usual suspects, Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay, and this time Chile, who actually I think entered the competition really as one of the sort of stronger teams from South America, which can't often be said. I think they went into the 1998 World Cup as with a lot of people favouring them, but it just didn't quite happen. So we'll see if they can improve on that. So there you go. Those are the 32 teams. And like I say, if you want more information about how you think we expect those teams to be seeded, then go to Some People on the Pitch and find our article all on World Cup seedings, for which Graham has spent a lot of time putting together. So there you go. Right, World Cup stuff done and dusted. We move on to that thing which on our agenda is cunningly titled Topic Number 2. And we are actually going to be looking at the Premier League action from the weekend. One result, it's fair to say, does stand out more than any other. And we'll give you a few seconds to see if you can work out which one we're talking about, folks. It's Tottenham beating Wigan 9-1. Quite an incredible result. In fact, I was slightly caught out yesterday when the game was going on. I didn't see it. I don't think it was on TV in the UK, as far as I was aware. But I noticed on the BBC website that it said that it was 6-1, and I actually thought that was a final score, so I kind of wandered off and did something else. And when I came back, about 2.5 minutes later, and found that it had gone up to 9, I couldn't quite work out what was happening. But an incredible result. Not sure how much of it you may have seen on TV in highlight form, Graham, but it did look probably every bit as much like Tottenham being on incredibly good form as much as Wigan defending really badly. Is that how you saw it?
Well, yeah, I mean, Wigan have been drubbed a couple of times this season, haven't they? I don't think there is a team, perhaps only Burnley, that blows hotter and colder than they do.
The interesting thing with Wigan is that they've been a bit difficult to predict recently. I mean, they beat Chelsea, and then next thing you know, they're losing 4-0 to Portsmouth. So as you say, they're kind of lurching from one extreme to the other. But Wigan did look pretty sloppy and lacking a bit of focus. But they did hold out at least to 51 minutes. I mean, 51 minutes into the game, they were still only 1-0 down. So it all just kind of crumbled in on itself like a pack
it
of
did,
cards.
Yeah, it did. I mean, there were a couple of bursts, I think, bursts of goals, weren't there, in the game? And yeah, they had a bit of bad luck as well, I suppose, with one of the goals or two, or a couple of the goals. But then again, you know, if you concede that many goals, then, you know, they're going to be some good ones, they're going to be some scrappy ones, aren't
quite
they?
Quite so, yeah.
It's just one of those things, really, isn't it? I think I don't think this sees Tottenham buy their way into the Champions League.
Not quite. No.
And I don't see it as securing Jermaine Defoe the Golden Boot or a starting place in Fabio Capello's England side.
Well, I was going to mention that because somebody certainly mentioned the fact that it gets Aaron Lennon a bit nearer the plane to South Africa, possibly, and I think it was Henry Winter was commenting recently, saying,
"Oh, really?
saying England must take Aaron Lennon. He's the man to play on the right wing. He's got plenty of pace and all that, which undoubtedly he has."
Well, yeah, but if Henry Winter says that, then I'm probably staunchly against it.
Yes, quite. I must say he's gone down well in my estimations. I used to sort of at one point used to think he was quite astute, but that was a long time ago now.
and then you suddenly realise, what an utter twat.
Quite. If you're listening, Henry, no, anyway.
You're a twat.
but they certainly played well. And there's a definite something about that partnership between Defoe and Crouch when they play together. When they start together, they seem to kind of work well as a pairing. And it goes without saying that Tottenham have got sort of strength in other areas of the pitch as well. You know, people sort of doing their job well. I think I'm trying to think. Cranchard, I think, was singled out by Harry Redknapp for his performance. It just all sort of happened really well, and it leaves Wigan now, unsurprisingly, shall we say, that with the worst goal difference in the entire Premier League. Tottenham, I say, they're now sort of level on points. I think I'm right in saying with Arsenal now. And reading in the Independent today, they're making something of the fact that, you know, Tottenham may not yet be kind of breaking into the top four, but they're staking a claim for being the better team in North London, which is a whole other discussion which perhaps we haven't got time for now. But Tottenham did well. The other big game, really.
Well, we'll see next week when they play Aston Villa. If they can beat Aston Villa 3-0 at Villa Park, then perhaps you'll see Tottenham's Champions League credentials.
If you see them
grind out a very typical Tottenham result or losing by a couple of goals, then you'll see.
This is
the Tottenham we're familiar with.
Yeah, that's why I'm not getting too sort of carried away with the whole sort of hullabaloo of the thing, because Tottenham have been sort of returning to their old form, really, been a bit sort of average, bit normal recently. So as you say, they could just as easily sort of fall back into that. So time will tell. The other kind of main game really that caught the eye in the Premier League at the weekend was Liverpool's draw with Man City 2-2, and Liverpool just really extending their poor run of form at the moment. I mean, they did go 1-0 up against Man City. I think you said you saw this one, did you not, Graham?
Yeah, it was one of the dullest games I've seen all season.
Particularly the first half.
Yeah, it was absolutely dire. I mean, like, you could tell that this was two teams that desperately just didn't want to lose.
No.
And that seemed more important than actually winning the game.
Yeah, very tentative, wasn't it?
It was just hopeless. I mean, it wasn't even like two teams cancelling themselves out, which is what you normally see with like these sort of like big four games.
Yeah.
But you don't tend to see that with Liverpool when they're playing other teams in the big four. You normally see sort of like quite an attacking sort of cut and thrust game from them. Mm. But I suppose they're in such a low place at the moment that they really sort of like decided that no, the best thing is just not to lose this.
Yeah.
And
Same for Man City.
Apart from a mad sort of like 5 minute spell in the middle of the second half, which really livened it up, and everyone thought, well, yeah, this is actually what it should have been like to begin with. So
yeah, Liverpool lost a couple of their players early on in the game through injuries and things. Which
I don't think that helped them at all. I mean, like that really unsettled them because they lost Agger and Babel, yes, didn't they?
Although ironically ended up that prompted Benny Yoon to come on, and he ended up scoring the second goal, which managed to salvage a point at least for Liverpool. But even after that, Benny Yoon was substituted for Arbeloa, I think it was, which I found a bit of a surprise. So
yeah,
but anyway, as we've sort of said, Liverpool are going through a pretty poor run, and we'll come on to them again in a moment because we're going to look ahead to the Champions League games coming up in the course of the next couple of days or so. No Europa League matches this week. They return in December, but just Champions League games this week. So moving on to that, let's cast our eye over the key games, and starting off with Group F, which is a very close group, the closest of all the groups, I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah.
Only a couple of points sort of separating top and bottom. And the games this week in that group are Barcelona against Inter, which was a 0-0 first time around. I suspect that there's going to be more at stake this time, and that'll end up rather differently. And Rubin Kazan playing Dynamo Kiev. So if Barcelona and Inter actually draw, then that could really kind of screw things up for both teams, because if either Rubin Kazan or Dynamo Kiev win that game, it'll probably put them top of the group and in pole position for the last fixture.
Well, the bald fact is, if Rubin Kazan win and Inter beat Barcelona, Barcelona are out.
Right.
That's
I think Liverpool got problems.
Yeah. That's a very sort of like serious truth for Barcelona. Yeah, it is so close in that group. I mean, that it's very difficult to tell. I mean, it's like Group F and Group C are the real sort of like really interesting groups in there at the moment. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, that's got to be a must watch, isn't it? The Barcelona Inter match.
Yes, indeed.
And luckily the Rubin Kazan Kiev game is on in the afternoon, so you can watch that first and then watch another one immediately afterwards.
Excellent. What? How very nice for those ex-Soviet types to arrange the fixtures in that way. Yes.
Indeed.
Yeah. So that's the kind of main focus in Group F. And in Group E, as I say, we come back to Liverpool again. Liverpool away to Debrecen, and Fiorentina playing Lyon as well. Now, as we know, Liverpool are in dire straits, and effectively they're hoping that firstly they can beat Debrecen to give them half a chance of getting through to the next round of the Champions League, but they're also hoping that Fiorentina fail to beat Lyon. Else, then, and basically they're screwed, just to use football parlance.
They are indeed. It's Europa League for them, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, basically, when you get to this position in the tournament, then that's it. You may as well be planning for Thursday night football.
Yes, indeed.
As far as that's concerned, because you can't go around relying on other people. I mean, as it is, if Fiorentina draw, then Liverpool have to beat Fiorentina at Anfield, as well as beating Debrecen, which they didn't do that convincingly at Anfield.
That's right.
If I seem to remember. It was only the odd goal, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, it was pretty close, if I remember. I can't remember how it finished, actually, but I think, it was... I'll come back to that. As one can when one's doing these things. But as you say, Liverpool have got to beat. Will probably have to beat Fiorentina in their last game if they even get through this week unscathed. And on current form, you have to say it doesn't look likely. Liverpool have only won one game in their last 10, and that was their 2-0 win over Man United, ironically. And if you look at a table of all the Premier League teams in their last six games, the sort of recent form, Liverpool are actually the fourth worst team at the moment on current form.
Yeah.
Only Wolves, Portsmouth and Hull are playing sort of worse than them in terms of number of points picked up, say, in the last six games. So I think that, as you say, if they're reaching this stage at the end of the this point at the end of the group stage and hoping for other results to go their way, then
Another thing as well is I've seen Debreceni, I've seen like highlights of the games, both the games they played against Fiorentina, and you know they all right, they conceded 9 goals across the 2 games, but they also scored 5, I think, across those.
Yeah.
And like they weren't afraid of attacking Fiorentina, and I don't think they're going to be afraid of attacking Liverpool, because they're rock bottom of the table on 0 points. They've got absolutely nothing to lose.
But they can,
except rather than just going out there and trying to get the 3 points.
And even if they get 1 point, it will put a serious dent in Rafa's.
That'll be it, wouldn't it? Really, as far as I mean, like, you know, Liverpool have to win, otherwise it is Europa League football for them.
Mm. You were quite right. It was just a 1-0 victory for Liverpool over Debrecen in the first game of the group, and as you say, Debrecen, they got 2 goals against Fiorentina. They got 3 against Fiorentina when they were playing them at home. So certainly they're not afraid of scoring a few goals here and there. So that could be quite an interesting one, to say the least. Elsewhere, Arsenal are pretty much home and dry. They're playing Standard Liège in Group H. And they went 2-0 down in that one the first time around, but came back to win 5-2. Arsenal this time will be at home. Do you foresee any problems in light of Arsenal's 1-0 defeat against Sunderland?
Nah, not really. I think if they need a point, then I'm sure they'll get that against Liège. Liège aren't good. They're pretty poor, actually.
Yeah,
so
I think they've done well hard work, haven't they, really, Arsenal, up to this point?
Yeah.
Similarly, in Group B, Man United playing Besiktas, and Man U, again, pretty much there in all but name.
ITV putting on a dead rubber. Yeah. Great.
Elsewhere in that group, CSKA and Moscow play Wolfsburg, and Wolfsburg need just a draw in order to go through in that match, and it looks very likely that they will. It'll be a tough game.
That's early afternoon as well, so come home from work, put that on the telly before watching something else.
I can see you're already getting your evening planned. This is good news.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be I'll be watching CSKA versus Wolfsburg and then turning over for Milan-Marseille, I think.
Right, there we go. Well, there's a man who knows what he wants.
Group D,
if you're talking about dead rubbers, you get no better example, really, than Porto against Chelsea. They're both through already, so no real reason to focus on that particularly. And in Group C, Real Madrid play Zurich while Milan play Marseille. Now, we've got a situation there where 2 of those 3 are going to go. I say those 3, of course, I'm talking about Real, Milan and Marseille. Only 2 can go through. And, Real need to beat Zurich this week and then, I guess, hope for Milan and Marseille drawing, and that will put Real Madrid in the box seat going into the final round of fixtures.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, though. I mean, like, because Milan and Marseille are going to be taking points off each other, then Real Madrid know that that a win against Zurich will probably be good enough going into the. I mean, it is going to go to the last round of games in that group, which is a good thing. But I don't think Real are going to have any problems.
No.
I mean, but Zurich did get that win at the San Siro, which was fantastic. Mm. But they haven't really done anything. I think they've got one other point, haven't they? I think they've got. Is that right? That's not just the. That's not the only points they've actually got now. No, that is the only points they've got this campaign. So.
That makes things a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, I think out of that group, it is going to be Milan and Madrid coming through. I think Marseille are where they are. They're third at the moment, and I think, well, this is why I think Milan Marseille is going to be the pick of the Wednesday night games, and it's a shame that it's relegated, I think, to the. I think it is actually on the interactive service rather than.
Is it? I couldn't find it listed anywhere. I looked to me like nobody was covering, but I'm sure it must be on the.
No, it is. Yeah.
So getting to down to the business end of things in Group C and elsewhere, Rangers are playing Stuttgart in Group G. Two teams really not in the best of form at the moment, and I think Rangers' chances of going through, even getting into the Europa League, looking a bit minimal, really, to say the least. And in Group A, interesting situation, Bayern playing Maccabi Haifa. Do you suspect that Bayern are going to fail to get through to the next round, Graham? On current form, they're not playing too well.
Well, yeah, I mean, like Maccabi haven't actually got any points from the running so far, but you know, an Israeli team in Munich, it might sort of give them a bit more incentive.
Quite.
Um, you know, just a bit more strength of will, perhaps. But no, I think Bayern, they really can't mess this one up, can they? Really, I mean. Again, like as we mentioned before, with the other teams taking points off each other, it means that with a win for Bayern, they will have something to go for in the last game. Yeah. I think they won't. No, because if Juve win,
that's then
if Juve beat Bordeaux, that's it all over, because Bordeaux have got the better
goal difference.
Head to head.
Oh right, okay, Bayern. Yeah, okay.
And that's how it's broken down. So
So Bordeaux against Juventus, the other game going on in Group A this week. So yes, all very interesting. So there you go. That's your sort of summing up of everything going on in Europe. And lastly, before we go, a quick cursory glance at the upcoming FA Cup second round games, which are going on. We mentioned this in a previous podcast, I think, when the first round came to an end and so on. ITV1 are covering a couple of games on Saturday and Sunday. Northwich Victoria, who you remember knocked out Charlton, they're at home to Lincoln. That's on ITV1 on Saturday. And then they're also showing the game between Kettering and Leeds, which I'm sure if Terry was with us this evening, he'd be saying he'd be keenly looking forward to, as I'm sure many of us will be too. So those are the two sort of TV games. And elsewhere, Northampton play Southampton. No jokes there about a fine couple of Hamptons being shown. Staines Town playing Millwall, and a couple of all non-league fixtures, which obviously will result in one of the two teams in question going through to the third round draw. Bath City playing Forest Green Rovers, and Oxford United are playing Barrow. So there will be at least a couple of, say, non-league teams in the third round. So much to look forward to.
Certainly.
So I think that's probably a good place to leave it. Looking, and the old clock on the wall tells me it's nearly 10 past Kirkland. I've been wanting to do that joke for a while.
Ho, ho.
So there we are. That's pretty much it, I think, for this week's podcast. Don't forget, you can catch us on all the usual channels. Visit us at our Sound of Football blog site. Just type Sound of Football into Google and follow your nose, you'll get there. That's no problem at all. You can catch our podcast on iTunes and subscribe to it there. And don't forget to leave us a comment if you so choose to do. Tell us what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. We'd be grateful to get your feedback on that. And you can catch us on Twitter and our Facebook fan page as well, Sound of Football. Just get involved and enjoy the fun that we're trying to create here. That is about it. Thank you very much indeed for listening. We hope to have the pleasure of your company again next week. But for now, from myself and Graham, I think it's time to say goodbye. See you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.